In der heutigen Podcast-Episode geht es nicht um Business-Analyse, sondern wir hatten die Gelegenheit, mit Jürgen Apello zu sprechen, Autor des Buches Management 3.0.
In dem Buch geht es ja um die Fragestellung, wie Management für agile Softwareentwicklung ausschauen könnte. Und viele Gedanken daraus, zum Beispiel über Komplexität und Systemtheorie, sind nicht nur für agile Softwareentwickler und Manager interessant.
Wenn ihr wissen wollt, warum drei Punkte kein Dreieck ergeben müssen oder wie Post-its die Zufriedenheit von Mitarbeitern erhöhen können,
dann hört weiter.
Sie hören den Business-Analyse-Podcast Wissen, was zählt mit Ingrid und Peter Gerstbach, www.businessanalyse.at. Denn Erfolg beginnt mit Verstehen.
Today we have a special guest. It's Jürgen Apello. He calls himself a creative networker, but mostly he is a writer, speaker, trainer, entrepreneur, illustrator, manager, blogger, reader, dreamer, leader, freethinker. Did I forgot something?
Well, you forgot about bragger, but it's actually not on the list.
Oh, okay, fine. So hello, Jürgen.
Welcome to our podcast.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
The first thing, we just want to ask you to introduce yourself. Ingrid already did some kind of introduction. So yes, maybe you want to tell our listeners something about yourself and what you did in the past and yeah.
Okay, certainly. So my name is Jürgen Apello and I call myself a writer primarily. I wrote the book Management 3.0, which was my first, and then a second small book called How to Change the World. And usually I write about management in agile organizations. What is the role of the manager, the leader, when we have self-organizing teams doing Scrum or Kanban or any other kind of agile approach to developing products and doing work. And I go around the world doing courses, workshops, and I speak at a lot of conferences. And I've been a manager for 15 years myself, which gives me a lot of stories to share. And nowadays I am CEO of a company called Happy Melly, which is a global business network of small businesses. That's briefly what I do nowadays.
Okay, great.
Thank you. So some days ago, you've been at the Reconf in Munich.
Correct.
You did the keynote there.
Yes, I did.
So maybe some of our listeners have heard you there. And if not, they have the chance now to get some introduction to your book and to your topics you cover. Because, well, business analysis covers requirements engineering. So it's interesting that you have been in Munich some days ago.
So what was your talk about there?
My talk at the Reconf was my most popular talk. It is called Let's Help Melly. Mm-hmm. It is based on the character Melly Shum, who hates her job. It is a billboard in my hometown in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. It mm-hmm. says Melly Shum hates her job, and I want to do something about that. There are many people like Melly in the world who hate their jobs. Actually, according to research, it's about 2/3 of the people worldwide do not like their jobs. And I think that's a sad statistic. I want to do something about that, or at least contribute to getting that number down. And what I do is describing a lot of practices on how we can improve organizations. And that's what my talk was about in Munich this week.
Okay, that's great, because that's something we want to show our listeners and everybody. Well, it should be fun to work, and so I like it.
Exactly.
So, what was the most challenge in your past?
Wow, that's an interesting question. The most challenging in the past, I think it is starting to like management, because in the past I hated management. I didn't like it at all when I was first promoted into management jobs.
Okay.
And in hindsight, I realized, and I just wrote about that today for my a third book, which I am about to finish writing these days.
Okay,
that's why, I come up with it. I hated it in the past because I did it wrong. I try to instruct people on how to do their work, and I had performance appraisals once per year, and I was wearing a suit while other people were wearing t-shirts and jeans, and I didn't like it one bit, and I thought that management was horrible. But later I understood how to do management right, and then I started liking it. It is actually quite enjoyable to be a good manager and to see people happy in their jobs. That's very fulfilling. It just means that you have to do very, very different things from the things that I simply copied from other managers. Those were actually bad behaviors. So I had to get rid of those. And I think that was one of the most challenging things that I had to learn over the last 15 or 20 years.
And so your roots are in software engineering, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. I have studied software engineering at the university in Delft. I started as a software developer and a trainer of software development right after I finished the university. But for some reason, I am also interested in business. I understand money. I know the difference between debit and credit. So I was quickly promoted into management positions because I was able to communicate with management. I understood their language. As one of my CEOs once said to me, you are the only software developer I understand around here, because the others were geeks. And I was a little bit less than a geek than the others, maybe. So that made me a manager basically by default, and then I had to learn how to be a manager because I studied being a software engineer. I never studied being a manager, so I had to learn that on the job.
Okay.
So, but why working as a manager when you are hating it so much? Why not working as a
software developer going on there?
Example.
Well, good question. As I said, I not only like software development, I also like the business side. I like marketing. I like business plans, strategy, etc. I find it all interesting, fascinating. So when you are offered a position like that, then sure, you take it also because it is the only way in traditional organizations to earn more money. The hierarchy basically makes sure that anyone who wants to earn more and wants to have a career ends up in management positions. I think it's bad, but that was the situation back then that I was confronted with.
But money is not really a motivating thing, isn't it?
Well, that depends. If you throw some money on the floor, I can show you that many people will bend over to pick it up. So money definitely motivates people to change their behaviors. Ultimately, it is not money that makes people satisfied and mm-hmm. happy jobs, correct? But it is too simplistic to say that money does not motivate. Actually, as I have claimed before, if you are so happy in your job and also have the privilege of being paid to do the work that you love, that is basically the position that I am now in. I am being paid to write and to speak, and that's awesome. Then money is basically a metric that proves to you that you're doing a good job because people are paying you for doing things that you love doing, and the money is basically proof that you're providing value. So in that sense, it is not the money that is on the bank account that motivates me, but in a way, making money is a validation of me providing value with the stuff that I do. So in that sense, the money is a motivator.
Mm-hmm. I see. Money is a sort of symbol, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. It is a proxy variable because the real value is very hard to measure. It's one of the chapters in my new book is about metrics. So the things that we really want to measure are always immeasurable.
Mm-hmm.
How do you measure love? Well, that's very difficult.
Indeed.
But the things that you can measure is how often do you have contact with someone, and how often do they call you, and all that stuff. And those are not real measurements that tell you how much they love you, but they are indicators in some way. And the same is with making money in business. It is an indicator of you providing mm-hmm. value, of course. It's not everything. There are plenty of stuff. There are plenty of unknowns that are important and that you cannot measure. So that you have to watch out that money does not become the sole driver. And then things go wrong.
Mm-hmm. So you wanted to make value, and so you choose to work in the management.
I always want to do things that I love, and earning money is just a validation of people appreciating the things that I do. I have never been very interested in doing things just for the creative component of it without being able to send someone an invoice for it. So for example, I also make illustrations myself for my own book and my presentations, and plenty of people in the past said, why don't you become a full-time illustrator or something? And I remember saying, even 20 years ago, I said, well, it's very hard to make money being an illustrator. Mm. You have to be really, really, really good. It is much easier to make money being a software developer. So there you see that personally, I seek the things that I love doing. I love software development more even than illustrating, but I also knew that business-wise it was smarter to write code than draw illustrations.
Okay, I mean, you when you talk about illustrations, the illustrations in your Management 3.0 book, you have done it yourself?
Yes, I do them all myself.
Well, I think they are quite nice, and they show what's about. It just we just have in front of us the body of knowledge of systems. This figure, mm-hmm. and well, it's a kind of ugly yep. creature, but that's exactly. what you want to convey, I think.
Yes, exactly. That was my point. The whole body of knowledge of systems is an ugly picture, but it works. It is alive and kicking. And that's an example of the funny pictures that I sometimes make. And they're simple illustrations. I never claim that I am a good illustrator. Many other people do this far better than I do. But what I like is first of all, adding a personal touch to my books, being able to say that I did the illustrations myself. Mm-hmm. Always people seem to like that. And it is also a good opportunity to be away from my computer every now and then, because I draw them on paper by hand, and that's basically the only thing that I do without a computer. So it's good to have one activity without a computer.
So I love this skirt. It's a nice tutu, isn't it?
Exactly.
What are you telling people like Melly, how to change their motivation, or how they can begin loving their job?
Well, I have spoken with people who do not like their jobs. I have a couple of friends who openly admit that they hate their jobs, but they don't quit. And when I ask them why, they tell them that they need the money. They need to pay the mortgage and all that kind of stuff, take care of children. So they feel they would love to do something else, but they feel insecure. They cannot make that step of being independent or finding something else. I always tell people that basically they have three choices. The first choice is accept what you do, see the nice things in your job and concentrate on that, and just ignore the rest of the bad organization, because it just makes you depressed. If you feel you cannot do anything about it, just ignore it and enjoy the good parts. The second option is change the organization. You have to see the challenge in that. You have to enjoy being a change agent. I like changing things. I like motivating, inspiring people so that they change their behaviors. I find that fascinating. That's the second option. So try to change your organization. And the third option is quit your job. One of my most favorite tweets, or the tweet that was most often retweeted, was my comment that there are only bad organizations in the world because people do not quit their jobs. If people just quit their jobs, then the bad organizations stop existing. So it's people not quitting their jobs that keeps bad organizations in place.
Okay.
So that's the third option. There is no option four, and that is complaining about it all the time. For me, that's not an option. I don't want to hear people complaining about their organizations all the time without choosing one of the three options I just described.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, maybe that's some kind of similarity between our listeners and what you now explained, because I would say business analysts are kind of change agents, because their aim is to understand an organization, or to at least define some kind of needs of the organization, and then contribute to finding solutions. Mm-hmm. And this situation, this thing business analysts do is what I find most interesting reading your book, or at least the beginning in your book. About the introductions, about simple things and not so simple things, and complex system theory, because that's, I think, is in common both for managing system developers and software engineering teams and business analyst teams, because they need to understand what's the context, what's the nature of the problem. And also what are solutions that are suitable to solve these problems?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I would be interested in, you wrote about complex system theory and all these theories that you put in this body of knowledge of systems. What was your what was the idea to start with an approach like this? Where does it come from? Where was there a need to change thinking about organizations as you did?
In the past, I have been reading a lot of books, popular science books and less popular science books, about how the universe works. I remember I had a whole spreadsheet with the best biology books and the best physics books and the best astronomy books, etc., because I find science fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, I don't know when, to be honest, I came across complexity science, and that was an eye-opener for me. I saw that complexity science, complexity theory, basically connects the dots between all the different sciences, and explains similar phenomena in the same way. Like, for example, in biology, there is a concept called the punctuated equilibrium that actually, from a systems perspective, is the same thing as what physicists call a phase transition. It just means the system changes from one moment to another into a completely different state. And biologists and physicists have both encountered this phenomenon and gave it different names, but it is the same thing. Mm-hmm. It is the same phenomenon. So, and that is what I found interesting, because when I started reading more and more, then I understood, hey, this also applies to organizations and the economy. It applies to all kinds of complex systems. And I saw the analogies with agile software development, of which I was also becoming a fan at the same time, with self-organizing team and emergent design. Even the words that were used in agile were borrowed from the complexity sciences. Mm. So then I set out to write a book about complexity science and software engineering. That was my original goal in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought somebody has to do something with this, and I completely failed to write a book at that time. I I did it as a kind of big upfront project. That was not the right approach. And in 2008, I thought maybe I should try again and then instead do it as a blog. Actually, my first or second blog post literally says, I want to write a book. I want to start learning how to write by writing small pieces of text in a very agile way and then get a feedback cycle going. Mm-hmm. And that has made all the difference, because then people said to me, well, that's all very interesting, all that science stuff, etc. But whenever I wrote about management, that was what they found most interesting, because I was a manager at the same time and I was introducing Scrum and I was struggling with what is the role of the manager in agile organizations. And it turns out many people struggle with that. So I've suddenly found my niche. I found what my readers want me to write about, which was the role of the manager in agile. And then I could still use all the knowledge that I had acquired about complexity science, of course, because it was all applicable. It just gave a solid background. But the focus became management, and then everything made sense for the first book.
Okay.
It's connecting the dots, isn't it?
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
That's
yeah, which
great.
Is also what complexity science is doing. It is connecting the dots. Actually, there's no one thing called complexity science, which I basically depicted with the illustration that you were referring to. There are many theories, evolutionary theory and chaos theory and information theory and queuing theory, and they're all different theories from different people, but somehow it is all connected, and then you call it complexity science.
Another thing we want to refer to, and I think this was one of your most important blog posts, is the Complex Manifesto for Software Development. I think you wrote it in 2009, so this was before the book was published.
Yeah.
And I think I found it was quite often cited on the internet, and so maybe it was... Was it a kind of a milestone for in your thinking?
I remember I wanted to wrap up my thinking of my book, because this also appears in the last chapter.
Yes.
The Management 3.0 book. And I wanted to wrap up everything and refer back to the science. And that's how I came up with a tongue-in-cheek reference to the Agile Manifesto, of course. Everyone was making manifestos at the time. So I thought, let's throw in another manifesto just for fun. But then it was my complexity manifesto. I don't know if anyone or many people actually refer to it. I don't know the statistics, but for me, the intention was wrapping up my book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I just want to say, I love the sentence, the world is more complex than we think it is. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the whole sense of it, isn't it? So
yes.
It's so complex and we just don't see the dots, but they are connecting in a very, very interesting way. And afterwards it's clear, because it's just connecting the dots.
Yes. And that's also actually how I started the book, with a similar remark or a quote, actually, which is for every complex problem, there is a simple answer. Or there's an answer that is simple and wrong, which also clearly indicates that people seek the simplistic answers to things that are actually complex. But it is much easier to ignore the complexity and just assume that things are simple.
This quote is Mencken, isn't
it? Yes, Mencken's quote. Yeah, exactly. And I even remember 20 years ago drawing a picture on a whiteboard and putting three dots on the whiteboard, and then asking my employees in the room, what do you see? And everyone said, I see a triangle. Mm-hmm. And then I started drawing a circle through the three dots.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, it was actually a circle, but I just started with the three dots.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what typically what people do. We see only few things and then we jump to conclusions. Oh, I see a triangle. But no, the only thing you saw was three dots. There was no triangle. It was just the three dots on a circle. It is a metaphorical, of course, but this is what happens all the time. People always seek the simple, straightforward answers. But unfortunately, usually the answers are more complex.
Yeah, and there's just more than one solution.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This complex manifesto of yours, I think it has some interesting thoughts for business analysts. What business analysts do is trying to find solutions for problems. And for example, in the business analysis body of knowledge, it's also recommended not only to find one solution, but to find more solutions so that it's possible to decide on multiple solutions. So I think in our economy, it's sometimes you don't really think about the problem and always come with ready solutions. And maybe it helps business analysts to understand this issue if they read this first sentence of your manifesto.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. What I would also like to add that is not always about work is not always about solving problems. As Russell Eckhoff, a famous systems thinker, said, sometimes problems need to be resolved,
mm-hmm.
which means that they go away by themselves. You do not focus on solving them, you focus on something else, and then the problems go away.
Mm.
I believe this is typical for many technical people, that they try to solve problems, try to analyze things, but some things are not made to be analyzed.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you a very concrete example. I was in a workshop last year with a company where people were not very motivated and happy, and management decided to measure happiness so that they could track it. They tried to analyze what was going on. And I asked them, how do they do that? And the employee said, well, management gives us a lot of forms to fill out every 3 months or so, with lots of questions about management, about each other, about the work, etc., etc. And I said, okay, and what is this doing to you? And somebody from the back of the room said, I hate those forms. So I said, okay, so let's observe what happens here. So the measurement is about happiness of people, and the measurement is destroying the happiness of people. Yes, everyone started nodding their heads. I said, well, this is apparently the wrong approach to solving this problem. I would pick up all those forms and go outside and set them on fire and make a video of it. And I would upload that video to YouTube. And then I would tell management, you should interview me now, because now I feel very happy at this moment. So this is an example of how analysis can sometimes lead people in entirely the wrong direction. I have a good example of happiness is what I often use in my classes, is the happiness door.
Mm-hmm.
It is simply a door with where people can put sticky notes with comments, feedback for me, for the facilitator. And the higher they put the sticky note, the happier they are. This is a very simple practice, but what I noticed is the happiness door itself makes people happier in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is such a fun practice.
Mm-hmm.
It is colorful, it is easy, it's simple. So the feedback method itself makes people happier. Now, that is a typical example of complexity thinking, because I did that. I do that on purpose. I know that this is having this effect on people. This way of measuring happiness is actually increasing the happiness. So it makes the sticky notes go up.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what business analysts and others should understand as well, that the way you solve your problem is influencing the problem, and you have to be aware of that. You could make the problem worse by analyzing the problem, or you could analyze it in a different way, and then the problem would disappear.
Yeah, I think your example is interesting, because I think when most people hear business analysis, they really think more about, well, maybe some management style of the past, where you have to thoroughly understand a problem and apply analytics on it and try to know the effect any change will have in advance. So it's quite a style you referred in your book to, well, management from the 20th century. Mm-hmm. But what I think interesting is, maybe it's the false word for business analysis. Well, I refer to business analysts as someone who is a change agent in the effect. So I think it's important for business analysts to have both kinds of thinkings. So thinking based on reductionism and also on holism, to refer to two chapters in your book.
I agree. So people need to be aware of different approaches, because different situations and problems need different angles. And some need to be solved, some problems need to be solved, and some problems just need to be resolved by maybe ignoring them or by doing something completely different.
Mm. And what are techniques you would propose for the second approach?
Well,
is it possible to apply techniques, or is this also a thinking of a wrong thinking in this kind of way?
I have a practice called Kudo Box in my new book, which is about giving people a token of appreciation, a Kudo card. Mm-hmm. And this is an example of something that systems thinkers would often agree with, that focuses on the good things that are happening in the organization. It's giving each other a compliment physically by writing it on a card and giving that card to that person. There could be even a present or involved or whatever. It doesn't matter that much. Just focusing on good behaviors could mean that you get more good behaviors. There are many organizations where people focus on bad behaviors, and then the result is simply more bad behaviors. You get what you focus on, or what you measure is what you get, is also often expressed. So it makes sense to spend more time focusing on the good things that we're doing instead of the bad things, because when we do that, maybe the bad things go away by themselves. We don't have to analyze them to death. We just ignore them until they are away by analyzing the good things that we have been doing, the learning and the good practices, etc. So this is an example of a technique, if as you call it, or a practice would be my preferred term, that does not directly solve the problems. It allows the problems to be resolved by focusing on something else.
I think people are angry or are feared about things they don't know. And I think that's the problem. So they hope to know it better by analyzing it. So it's just the fear behind that.
Yes, that is correct. That is a well-known observation in science, in social science, that people put a much higher emphasis on the things they fear than the things they see as an opportunity. Risk mm-hmm. is weighed much more heavily than opportunity, which is a shame.
Yeah.
I see that again and again with all the practices that I offer and that I promote. People say, but what if this, and what if that, and mm-hmm. what if this happens, and what if that happens? So, for example, a new way of distributing bonuses or money in the organization. But what if it demotivates some people? Is then always one of the first questions. then my answer is, well, what you're doing now is probably demotivating 80% of the people. At least that's what the research says, that the traditional approaches of paying people salary are demotivating at least 80% of the employees. Mm. So why are you so concerned that a new approach might demotivate 20% of the people? That's a 60% gain that you have. But then it's always the same question. But what if some people are demotivated without people looking at the bad effects of what they have now? Because indeed, they fear risk.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yeah. There is a theory from, I think it was Sherlock Holmes, who said that it is much better to focus on things you don't see than on things you see, because things that are not there are much more important than the things you see or they are already there. So the way to gain luck and to be happy is just on focusing on things that are there, but good things. So not just on the fear, but as you said, focusing on the fear just makes fear.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I agree with that. I don't know the author you were referring to, but it makes sense to me. It sounds a bit similar also to the work by Nassim Taleb, who wrote Black Swans. Mm-hmm. Said the things we know are not as important as the unknown unknowns, the things that we cannot even predict, because they will ultimately have a much bigger impact on our business. So it all seems related that way.
Mm-hmm. That's true, yeah. And sometimes it's like the detective, just a puzzle. And sometimes you need just another piece of the puzzle to make a whole picture of it. And sometimes you already don't have the puzzle piece. So you have to wait, or you have to do something further, and then you gain the puzzle.
Right. Yeah.
If we go back to managing teams, what would be your advice how to make this change, to change way of thinking about people, teams and management? So what are your tips for those who want to make a change in an organization?
Well, my tips are to start with simple practices that anyone can introduce. In agile organizations, managers are expected to be servant leaders and to trust the team, but nobody explains to them exactly how they can do that next Monday morning. And empowering workers and delighting customers is all very important. It is crucial, but it is abstract. While managers and all workers need to know how we do these things, in order to implement better management together, maybe with fewer managers even. So with my new book, Management Workout is the title, working title, I offer about 17 or 18 practices that are very concrete, like a salary formula or a kudo box or a delegation board or moving motivators game. This is all stuff that people can do next Monday morning. And not just the managers, but everyone, because management is too important to leave to the managers, as I always say. testing is too important just to leave to the testers. That's the same thing. So everyone is responsible. Everyone can start implementing such practices, and you have to experiment. Do not just expect that a good practice that works for a company on the other side of the world magically also works for you. You probably have to adapt it a little bit, but that's okay. You probably can steal 90%, and the other 10% you have to change. But that's easier than reinventing the wheel all by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's a nice picture.
Yeah, then I think it's important to not to rely on recipes, but to show, to see, okay, what do we have here? What's the situation? And then apply well, then think about how to make it better.
Yeah, right. Just it's your turn and you are responsible for what you do. And you have to see the whole picture, not just focusing on a piece of picture. So just take a step backwards and just look to the whole. Yeah?
And keep running experiments is what I keep reminding people in my work and in my writing, in my talks. That's very important. There's one thing that is missing in some of the most popular agile methods is running experiments, just trying things out. Because if everything that a team does is just processing one requirement, one user story after the other, then they're just playing it safely. They're just doing what the customer asks. But maybe they should do something weird every now and then and see what happens. That is when you explore new terrains and unknown territory. That's where innovation happens.
Yes, and just another rule, maybe don't talk, just do it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the reason why I started with the Happy Melly Business Network, because I have been part of several communities, and I'm very proud to have been the founder of Agile Lean Europe and the STOS network. And it was all awesome, but I noticed that it was a lot of talk that we did. And just talking is not going to change the world. So I said to a couple of my friends, I said, let's start something else, and it should be a business this time. We should make money instead of just broadcasting PowerPoint slides at each other. That is not going to change the world. We can change the world by being the business that leads by example, that shows to others what we're doing. So, for example, the new bonus system that I describe in my new book, Merit Money System, where basically teams distribute bonus money among each other, that is actually used by ourselves. With me and my management team, we've been using it now for half a year, and it's very useful. There's not one manager distributing bonuses. No, we distribute the bonus money in a self-organized fashion, in short iterations, so that we can learn from our own behaviors, and it works. So by leading by example, we can show others what they can do. And that works better indeed. Just do it is better than just talking about it.
Well, that's a difficult thing if you provide a podcast here, because podcast is just about talking. So the most important thing, and maybe we find something here for the end of the podcast, is some kind of help technique or just kind of things to take away for our listeners. What, for example, what helps to understand this new way of thinking? And so what would you recommend to our listeners after they have read your book, of course, to apply this new kind of thinking to their everyday life?
Well, the answer to that is, I think, pretty obvious, which is read my articles. they're all free. They're all up there for ready for download. If you want to know how to introduce a better way of deciding on salaries for everyone, I have an article about that called Salary Formula. If you want to know how to do performance measurements, performance metrics better, I have a metrics ecosystem article. If you want to get rid of performance appraisals, also I have an article about that. So just download the articles and read and start experimenting, and let me know what good stories you have to share with the rest of the world.
It's a kind of iterative process.
Right, as it has always been for me for the last 20 years.
Well, that's the most important thing. Try things out and then reflect upon it and share.
With others.
Okay, great.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the nice talk.
Is there anything we might have missed?
I'm sure we could go on for days. if you let me do the talking, then you will have to swap batteries of your recording device after a while.
Oh, that's okay.
I think we covered very important and interesting areas. And of course, people can always reach out to me. They can send me an email if they want to know more about a specific topic or something. That's fine. But I think this is a great introduction. And thank you for asking me to do this.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot for the talk. And we will write your addresses in our show notes. Yes.
And some provide good. Some links to your articles you mentioned.
When does your new book comes out?
My new book, I am now finishing the last chapters. Then I have to do a rewrite, including stories that people have sent me, and work with a copy editor and all that stuff. So we're looking at another 2 months before will be finished. I expect the PDF version will be available in May.
Okay,
and
great.
Other versions, Kindle and paper, will be available later.
Fine.
Okay, then thank you very much again.
My pleasure.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.